As my wife and every other woman in the room reminded me, I forgot to tell you what E was in the sermon for the last letter in the, and it means esteem. I actually mentioned it, I just forgot to tell you before you publicly praise your wife and that type of thing. So that's for esteem, you esteem her or him, we mentioned it too. It's both sides of the fence, but we picked on the ladies, now we're picking on the men today. The Proverbs 31, I mentioned that verbally, verse 28-29, where he speaks highly of her. She's a successful businesswoman, all that type of thing. And again, your love motivates her, and her respect motivates him. So, these types of things. So hopefully we got that all. Okay, I covered it, but I forgot to tell you the letter. So, I really think this is a good book. There are always going to be things in here you're going to say, we wouldn't agree with that theologically. You should be mature enough spiritually to see that and go right over it. But you can always learn. Okay, we've got that. We've got that. Okay, we've asked in the prayer, we've asked for a guidance on the Bible study and all that too, so we'll jump into that. I don't intend to cover every aspect of this, but I want to talk about today, part one, the purpose for the book of Titus. I imagine, I don't know how long you've been since you read Titus. And I'm going to be reading from a modern translation. You read in yours, whatever, probably is the King James. And again, just to get a little feel for it, I'm not going to read all of it here, but just a little bit. Starting with Titus 1, we want to talk about why was Titus written and why was it preserved for us. You know, we again can't cover every detail. I don't know every detail, but we cover a lot of the ones that are very transparent. Verse 1, chapter 1. This letter is from Paul. Again, it's from a modern translation. A slave of God, an apostle of Jesus Christ, have been sent to bring faith to those God has chosen and to teach them to know the truth that shows them how to live godly lives. It's very much a not just a theological or theoretical discussion. How do you live life? And that's part of what his calling was. And I think we took a look at that in the sermon. It isn't just enough to have a theological discussion. We've got to learn, well, how do you apply this stuff in a daily manner, in a daily way? How do we apply this? And Trey told me to go fast, so I will try to go fast. And it is interesting, what he did was, Paul didn't think much of Cretans, if you people from Crete, and actually not many people did. We'll get into that in just a minute. It's actually one of the reasons why the book was written. But he gets into this book and starts talking about the qualifications for elder. I'm not going to go into a lot of that, but I'm just kind of breeze over it. Then we'll get to why it had to be given these instructions in this book. We find it in Timothy. Timothy has some of that. But why repeat it here for the book of Titus and so forth? We'll go here, again, trying to just read it quickly. Verse 5. I left you in the island of Crete, who did he leave? Titus, so that you complete our work there and appoint elders in each town as I instructed you. So he would get to know the people and appoint elders. Paul was to move on. He had other things to do. Isn't it interesting? We think today, you know, we have to be patient and wait for the mail to come. It may take 4 or 5 days to get the mail. We pay 44 cents for it. They often would wait months. Well, the weather has changed. We can't get on a boat right now until the winds change, and that won't be till spring. Or we can walk around 25, you know, 100 mile isthmus or whatever it is, then we can get there. It would take... rainy seasons would come and go, and they couldn't move very much. Even whole wars would stop during the rainy season. They just stop fighting wars for a while because, you know, chariots get bogged down in the mud. Armies don't move very well in mud. It's a very different time. But anyway, so he would leave, and He would always hope to get back to visit the churches he'd been at. But sometimes he did, sometimes he didn't, because it's very difficult traveling. But he says that now he's going to appoint elders. An elder, verse 6, must be well thought of for his good life or good conduct. And again, this is from the modern translation. He must be faithful to his wife, and his children must be believers who are not wild or rebellious, assuming he has children. Sometimes they don't have children, or the children are so young. Now, it's interesting here, when you look at this, the word is steward, had to be a good steward. And I'll read here from the King James. Let me get this, New King James. Verse 6, a man must be blameless. That's not perfect. Nobody's perfect. But he doesn't have a glaring problem here. And the first thing he says, a husband of one wife. If he's got a bad marriage, then he's not going to qualify for being elder. Does he have a perfect marriage? Nobody has a perfect marriage. But if his marriage is a wreck, why would that be important? Having faithful children. Well, that's going to be reflection in the marriage oftentimes. If you have unruly children, sometimes it reflects dysfunction in the marriage. Not all the time, but many times it does. It may also reflect just bad child-rearing principles that are being applied, and they don't know the other ones. Not accused of riotous living, as it would say in a modern translation, or insubordination. Well, it's interesting here, the word for godly steward here is really talking about a household manager. Like it says here in verse 7, for a bishop or an elder must be blameless. Didn't say perfect. He doesn't have a huge glaring problem that just would stop him from serving in this capacity. As a steward, and then the word steward again, so means a household manager. An elder, whether we call him a pastor or a local elder or whatever, we kind of break these up somewhat artificially in the church, years ago, to designate a full-time elder as opposed to a local elder. And a full-time elder obviously has more of the Holy Spirit because a paycheck comes with it. No, that doesn't make it. No, that's not right at all. But it was a way for us to designate that. And thankfully, in United, we've gotten away from the rank idea, And so that's as far as, do we have a local. How did that go? Local elder? You're just a local.
I'm a
local. You're the local. You're a local elder. And then we had sort of local elders, like maybe associate pastor, that type of thing. Then you have an elder. Then you had a preaching elder. That's not in the scripture. So we got it. We kind of, grow up and mature. So that's good. So, but there are these elements here of elder. So to be careful that who do we select to be an elder? Because really the elder is like dad over the family. Now, some of you are older than me, but the principal is there, the office. And if a man can't lead his own wife and children in a right way, how can he lead the church? That's exactly what we're seeing in the scripture. And sadly, sometimes, and it's been a long time ago, and I don't know every elder, but I think we've made some real strides in improving in that area. But if a man cannot keep his household locally with his wife and children in a godly way, and things are out of control, and he's got major issues in his own life, we all have problems, but I'm talking about major issues. Then he shouldn't be appointed to that. He can serve in other areas. So the word steward here means household manager, and elder manages God's household. 1 Timothy 3:5, just real quickly. 1 Timothy 3, the principles are here, so you see them mentioned several places. 1 Timothy 3, if a man does not know how to rule his own house or to lead it, how can he care for the church of God? And boy, And again, our children weren't perfect. We don't have a perfect marriage. I'm certainly not a perfect husband. Anything like that. But if all of our kids were unruly and, holy terrors or whatever you want to call it,
and we hated each other and we fought together all the time, and you know, it would be pretty evident. And how would that inspire you, and how would that help you? So we try to be an example. We don't always do it well, you know, perfectly, but we try. As I think every elder and his wife do. So anyway, that's the point. So if you can't lead your own house, how can you lead the house of the household of God, the church? That principle, I'm not going to turn there, but I'm going to refer you to it. 1 Corinthians 4. 1 Corinthians 4, verses 1 and 2. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 17. I've already read to you today. Ephesians 3, 2. And Colossians 1:25. I say, what about an elder who's an alcoholic? Glenn White's a recovering alcoholic. When he first came in the pastorate years and years ago, he has no objection to me commenting because he does the alcoholism lecture for the ministers and at ABC and everything else. So he's very open about it. He backed into alcoholism in the ministry. You know, you sometimes are stressed on the job, so you come home and watch the news and have a beer. Okay, well, that's not going to end the world there. And then he got into the habit where he'd come home, and then he had to have two beers and watch the news. Was he driving drunk? No. Was he drunk at work? No. Then it got to where he kind of needed that two or three beers before he could go to sleep. And then it got worse and worse, and he kept backing into it. And so I've known that's sort of his story. And finally, it got to the point where life says, you either quit drinking and get help, or I'm going to leave you, kind of thing. And there's been other pastors in that. Now, is that a glaring thing that he should be removed? If he repents of it, and it's just not, and he gets the help he needs, got into AA, he does all those things, then, and there's not been a repeat of that, there hasn't been devastation in other people's lives, there's some other qualifiers. But no, what he does now is he can teach. Been there, done that, got the t-shirt, you don't want to go down that route. But he hasn't had a drink in 30 years. We were at the refresher program, I'm not refresher, but one of these conferences several years back. And we just happened to always end up at lunch together, and it wasn't planned, it just happened. And of course, I know his story because he gives sermons on this thing. And he just says, you don't drink, do you? And I said, oh, very, very little. And why? Because I have an alcoholic grandparent, probably an alcoholic father, although he was never diagnosed. And when I was very young, when I drank, I would get mean. And so, I decided, this is crazy. And I told him that, and he says, you're wise not to do it because of your background, it's easy to get into that. And I knew that. Now, will I have a glass of wine with somebody? Sometimes. More than anything, upsets my stomach now. I don't know what that is, but, it's no big deal. But I asked him, does it bother you to sit here and these guys are drinking a beer? And, that's fine. They don't have that problem. He says, not after this, not all this time. So anyway, that's just popped in my mind to say that. If he's repenting, he's changing of it, and it's he's backed into this problem and, he's made the changes, he can actually use that for the good. He can use that for the good. Okay. Again, some qualifications here. I'm going to go back to Titus now. We will not get through all this, but I don't want to get bogged down in all the little details of what is required here, but just quickly go over it and then talk to you why he had to cover this. Okay, verse 7 again, the bishop must be blameless. Again, we know this doesn't mean perfect. As a steward of God, head of the household of the church, not self-willed. Literally means self-pleasing. Everything is about pleasing him, meeting his needs. Boy, and again, I don't want to beat up on the past, but we can learn from the past. Sometimes in the past, and I'd like to think it's been a long time ago now, we've had some pastors who were just bullies, and they bullied people. And that kind of built them up. That hurt so many people. Some of them are still licking their wounds and dealing with it right now, bitternesses and stresses, because it was all about them. My wife and I kid each other, it's all about you, isn't it? No, it's all about me. But we're just kidding around with each other. But when you get somebody who has a responsibility and it goes to their head, Boy. It's like, was it Saul? Did okay when he was small in his own eyes, remember? And then when it went to his head, he lost it.
So, anyways, it's not all about him. And how smart he is or how talented he is. It's not that. It's more about you want to serve the people. And that's what you're there to do. Imperfectly, yes, but you're still trying to do it. Not quick-tempered. He doesn't have a short fuse. Not given to wine. Okay? Not violent. Sometimes those things go together. But you don't want to have a counseling session that ends up fist to cuffs. You know, I may do that with Jane every now and again, but we don't talk about it publicly. Not greedy for money. My daughter said, I'm not marrying a minister. I don't want to be poor. And she thinks we were poor, but we're not. But when we were part-time, we were poor, if she can remember that. But nonetheless, that's the way it goes. And we God always provided for us. And she did. She married a man who's just, he's very good with finance. Got a summa cum laude, graduated summa cum laude in finances. So once I figure out what that means, I'm going to get one of those too. So anyway, be hospitable. And being hospitable is to willing to share your things. And in this time, in this culture, traveling was very dangerous. And people would really take advantage of you. And motels were really not the place you wanted to go. What we call the public accommodations, they're basically for prostitution. And so if somebody in the church is traveling, you want to make sure if there's an elder in town or other members that they are hospitable. Let them come to, you don't want to go to that motel. I think you see what I'm saying. A lover of what is good, sober-minded, some of these things you don't have to discuss. Just, in this case, innocent of his conduct is innocent and, again, not real glaring problems. He has self-control, all these things. Now, you can read through there. I'm not going to read every bit of it to you because I want to get to why this was needed. Why did he write these things? Again, because Trey wants me to hurry up. And the other thing is important that he be sound in doctrine. Does that mean you know everything? I don't know. You don't know everything. Nobody knows everything. Nobody knows everything. And probably in that is really something good. You don't have all the answers, so you keep looking. You keep studying. You keep trying to find and understand. Or you see this much of a package of understanding, and then God shows you something. I said, oh, well, that kind of enlarges that package. I hadn't really thought about it in that term. So you're growing in that way. But he should also be able to refute or correct those who contradict sound teaching. He says these things. As in verse 9, as we move down through here, holding fast the faithful word as he's been taught. You can't just have everybody out there finding their own doctrine and their own philosophy. This is what I think. And I have to be careful with that because, you know, let's say we have about 15,000 people in United, for example. There's other fellowships, of course. Well, if every one of us have our own personal view, I guarantee you we're not always going to agree. So anyway, got to be careful with that. Got to start with the premise of what you were taught. That he may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and convict. In other words, to encourage, but also correct if need be those who contradict. Contradict what? Sound doctrine. And it doesn't mean we know everything. I personally believe as we get closer and closer to the end, a lot of things that we've read right over, we don't see now. I mean, we read it, but we don't see it. And God will show us on a sudden, we'll say, wow, boy, there's an application we never thought of before. Will it be the two witnesses to help us see that? I don't know. I don't get into all that. Too much speculation, just get lost in it after a while. But I know there's things we don't understand. Remember when the men were walking with Christ? Remember we talked about this in the last sermon? And they just didn't get it until finally Christ went through from Moses all the way through about all the scriptures that pertain to Christ's suffering. They just didn't get it. They grew up around it. They didn't get it. Finally, they got understanding that they never really had before. I'm sure we're going to run into that. We need to be ready for that. All right, now, let's go ahead now in verse 10. For there are many insubordinate, both idle talkers and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision. There were many people in the church. This is talking about within the church. Outside, it's easier to see somebody who's teaching false. You can see that. But in the church, when that happened, he says there are many insubordinate in Crete at this time. Now, why would there be many? Because as we'll see in just a little bit, this whole area was noted for the scoundrels that came out of this area. And they were proud of the fact they were a long line of scoundrels. And Paul even talked about that. And so people, when they came into the church, a lot of the idle talkers, if you will, empty talkers is another way of putting it. I think Timothy mentions here they great flowing words of wisdom, but they don't mean, I'm not getting it exactly right. They have a lot of puff to their words, but no meaning. What's the word I'm trying to think of? Swelling words. I think of rice and puff. Okay, whatever. I'm been in the sun all week. Forgive me. Okay, great swelling words don't mean anything. It's like Trey asked me, what are we going to do in the study? So, well, we're going to have a Pentateuchal discussion of the Decalogue as it pertains to the patriarchal narrative contained therein. He goes, what? There's a lot of swelling words that don't really mean a whole lot, but it was fun. See? All right, so we're not even doing that today. So again, there's idle talkers, but if you want to be an elder, you have to be faithful with the word, have to be faithful with your wife, have to be balanced in your child rearing. So he gave the things that you need to have, and he says, but what you have here is a lot of idle talkers. They love to philosophize. A lot of times, idle talkers, there's a lot of work to be done, but they'd rather sit in the corner and talk. Let's get something done first. Pick up the tables, move things around, whatever it is. Then if we have time, then we'll do that. But idle talkers, deceivers, especially those of the circumcision, the Jews were coming in and they were claiming to be Christians. Many of them probably were. But they were beginning to teach that, you got to be circumcised to be saved. And you got to follow the things of the Jews to be saved. And people were, and then when you follow back and study the angels and all of these different things that get into, Galatians talks about it. And people were getting led off the track by that. So it's more fun to sit in the corner and have a great philosophical discussion over something than do the practical things. And he says, here's what he says. This, remember, an elder has to be able to rebuke and exhort. And this is what he says now in verse 11. Whose mouths must be stopped, who subvert whole households, teaching the things which ought not be for the sake of dishonest gain. They're out to make money. And again, in those days, people walked around as philosophers and make a lot of money doing it. Today, they're called televangelists. That's sort of half a joke. But this is a real problem in the church. False teachers teaching false doctrine, leading them astray. That's why he started with, in order to be a teacher, you need to have these qualifications. They shouldn't have these glaring problems with them. I don't know that I could speak with any credibility if, on marriage and this type of thing. One, if I'd never been married. Okay, I can tell you all about being married. And how a woman thinks and how a man thinks. I got the man part down, but I don't know anything about the woman part if I've never been married. And I really don't know how the man thinks with the woman if I haven't been with the woman in the marriage. You got that. So I always thought, why do people go to a priest? So no experience in that area. So, and again, that's a problem with a young pastor if he's just married or not married yet. That's why we try to be very careful not to have a young guy go out until he's got some life experience. And really, a lot of the guys are just going out. Now the young men are in their 40s. So they have a more life experience to them. But in the early days, we couldn't do that. We're desperate, had to get somebody out there, and sometimes a warm body. And it didn't always work out well. Okay, let's move on here.
So he says within the church there was a lot of this going on in Crete.
Verse 12, one of them, a prophet of their own, said that Cretans, were in verse 12, are always liars, evil beasts, lazy gluttons. This is what one of their own philosophers said. And there's other quotes I can quote in there. I won't spend the time. But if you read a concordance, not a concordance, a history of this book, off the computer or whatever, if you got a book, you'll see. They quote themselves. And they were sort of proud of the fact that this is what they were. Very, very, very worldly approach. Now see, no matter how you swing it, every congregation today in the Church of God is affected by the area it comes out of. That's why I love West Texas and New Mexico. Because you still have a lot of good common sense, good solid things that you knew when you were growing up, you still have with you. I guarantee you go to New York City, sorry for New York if you're hearing this, it is not the same in New York City as it is in Lubbock, Texas. I think you probably realize that. If you go out to California, it's very different than here. You go to the East Coast, it's different than here, than California. Wherever you're at really affects the church. We've been in lots of areas, been in the hills of West Virginia, down this order, but Texas, Illinois, Louisiana, where else? Mississippi. And all of those places are very different, and they're all affected by the environment around them. Kids in big cities are hard by the time they're 13. They have seen a lot at school. They've seen a lot in the world, and it's hard. They're hard. They have to be to survive. Out here, they kind of get to go because there's more sanity here. Although we are slowly going down with the rest of them, but we're better off here than many other places. I think you all know that. But anyway, a man by the name of Epimenides, I think I got his name right, this is what he wrote in 600 B.C. about his own people. He said, the people of Crete had one of the worst reputations, this is how it starts, in the ancient world, in this man by Epimenides. He said, trying to find here, I think Paul was partly quoting him. Basically, he says, well, what Paul says, they're liars, gluttons, lazy. And he says, now, my point is, people were coming into the church in this environment. We're lazy, no counts. These Cretans came in, they were lazy, gluttonous, liars. They're like evil beasts. And some of them got to be elders. And did that affect the church? You bet it did. See? And, you know, if you've traveled much around the country, you know every congregation is very different, has another history. I know some congregations in worldwide days, I'll protect myself, you did not want that church. He was in the ministry, you don't want, that's a man killer. Don't go, if you get that one, try to get transferred out. I will say where. In fact, and I won't say anymore. But anyway, but where that church is located, it just eats God's people up and spits them out. Very few survive. It's a rough city. It's not the one you think. Because I don't think you'd guess. Anyway, but Paul says this testimony is true. Therefore, rebuke them sharply. So that's why an elder, he set the qualifications up. An elder who has the proper qualifications now has to confront this false doctrine that's devouring whole households. That's one of the reasons why this book was written. That's really the point we're getting at here today, is that you as a sound elder or sound leader, you need to come in now and stop this because it's destroying the church. You found the same thing going on in Corinth. You found the same thing going on in Galatia. Remember when the Gnostic notions began to spread and spread. And they're really spreading now in our time too, the Gnostic teachings. So we have to be very careful with that. Also the notion that all things Jewish are good. Some interesting things, but just because it's Jewish doesn't mean, you know, no. So you have to be very careful because they fall into that. So he was dealing with Cretans who were this way. He was dealing with Judaizers or people who were, they called themselves Christian Jews, and then all this confusion going on in the church. And he says, in order to fix this, we have to get the right leadership in there and get this thing straightened up. It's very difficult.
Verse 13 again.
Therefore rebuke them sharply, that they may be of sound in faith. You have to correct the whole congregation, show where it's wrong. Also correct the false teachers, which is never fun. Not giving heed to Jewish fables, there it is, and commandments of men who turn from the truth. These are, again, they knew the truth, but they turned from it. Again, some of these were Jews and really turning back to Judaism. You read the book of Hebrews, shows you that. Hebrews 6, Hebrews 10. If you turn away from the truth, there remains no more sacrifice for sin. That whole thing. Verse 16, they profess to know God, but in their works they deny him, being abominable, disobedient, and disqualified for every good work. And again, idolatrous in that sense, abominable or idolatrous. Again, this was the level of problems that was going on in the church. Remember we talked about most of the New Testament writings were to deal with troubles in the church? So why should we be surprised when we have them from time to time in the modern church? Now, chapter 2, but as for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine. Again, see, it's for sound doctrine. So the thing here is, this is important, that the older men be sober, not a given to wine and this type of thing, but also serious, they take their faith seriously and so forth. Reverent, probably better put honorable or honest. You see a sort of a whole picture of how these people, the older people should be, temperate or moderate as to opinions and passions. It actually says in the Greek. They're moderate in things. They're not extreme in any of these things. You know, people who get hung up on one, they think they see something in the Bible and they just cling onto that and it becomes the base core of theology. Everything's around that. And it's only time before they're gone because not everybody's going to agree with that. And then they get upset and, you know, whatever. They get imbalanced in that. Satan wants to get us imbalanced. And if he can get you imbalanced in the idea of spirituality, boy, he's got you. So you need to be balanced. And it's always a struggle to stay balanced, isn't it? No. I have a problem. Okay, bad. Okay. Now, the older women, likewise, that they be serious in their conduct, the good examples, in other words, reverent, in behavior, not slanderers. Why? Again, a gift of a lady is they speak. The curse of a woman is they talk too much sometimes, don't you? Men grunt probably too much, but women tend to talk too much because they like to talk. Remember they got in touch with their feelings? That's good. But always in our life, our weaknesses are our strengths out of balance, aren't they? We've said this before in other sermons. I just love him so much. He's just the tall, silent type. 5 years down the line after marriage, what's she saying? He doesn't talk to me. Or we can just sit and just talk and talk all night long. Or I say, wait a minute. Did he talk and talk all night long? Or did you? Or and then when you get married, he never shuts up or she never shuts up. So the whole thing. Balance. The older women likewise that they by behavior. So let's talk about that. We've talked about this before. It's just a simple process. You set example by behavior, not by preaching. Whether you're a woman or a man, older or younger, the younger should learn from the older by their preaching. No, by their example. Again, just to bring up, we're talking about the ladies here. What should an older woman know that a younger woman doesn't? Most likely, and we see that, I think, primarily in the church, modesty. Modesty is very important. Now, you can learn modesty from an older woman. Now, does a 20-year-old woman dress in the same style as a 60-year-old woman? No. It's just not that, but you can learn the principle of modesty. Hopefully, we don't. How many times do you see a 60-year-old woman that's so young, has a plunging neckline? You don't see it. They've learned modesty. While a 20-year-old woman might not have learned that principle yet. See? And so, even though the parents may have tried to teach them, you know, I see kids in my generation, sometimes my own kids. I say, you know, I wish they wouldn't dress that way, but they're adults now. I said, watch and learn from the example of the elders in your church. See? Learn the principle of modesty from the older ladies. And this is the principle here. And again, my wife doesn't wear the same clothes she wore when we got married, same styles. She says, this is too young looking, or, you know, whatever. I don't. That type of thing. Men wear fat ties or skinny ties, and then again, that's pretty much it, huh? So, the principle is there. Not saying you have to wear the same clothing. Learn the principle from the older ladies of moderation. And again, in behavior, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers. They know how to control their tongue. Not given too much wine. Doesn't say they can never have a drink unless they're an alcoholic, then they don't drink. And you can learn from that example. Moderation there. Teachers of good things. How can they be teachers of good things? You watch them. Watch them, young ladies. Watch the older ladies. How do they treat their grandchildren? How do they treat their grown children? And if they're sound and balanced, learn from that example. Watch them. You see, you have a responsibility as a younger person. It's incumbent upon you to watch. See? To look. So it's very, very, very important. Sometimes it gets discouraging when you try to set the example. You know, none of us do it perfectly. It's just they don't see it. Because they're not looking. So it's very, very difficult. Again, to learn the principles that you're learning here. And the thing that's, there's several things, at least this is just my opinion, and you can mark it up as that. A couple areas where the church is being overrun by the world. Marriages and child-rearing. Marriages and child-rearing, you see how they go together. The world is just drowning the church in both these areas. Try to teach them sound doctrine, many times it goes right over their heads. They just don't see it. They think they're doing it, but they're not. It's very frustrating at times. So, but study. It's a responsibility of the younger women and men. We'll talk about the men too. It's their responsibility to study the good example of the older people. What does our culture do? Put them away. Get rid of the old ones. They don't know anything. So, I think I'm preaching to the choir. I think you understand that. There be teachers of good things. And how do they teach you? By example. Most of you ladies haven't given... Well, you may give a sermon at home. I understand that. Believe me. Okay. Actually, I don't have that either. But verse 4, that they may admonish the young women to love their husbands and to love their children. Study these ladies. How they do it. Be discreet. See? Chase. Now, homemakers. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with being a homemaker. If you have a career outside the home, that's fine. My wife has a career outside the home, but she waited until the children were grown. Now, sometimes you can't. Your financial situation, you know, sometimes that doesn't work, but you still got to work at these things. Keep them a priority. To be discreet, again, discreet, you might say separate or distinct from others, be an example, in other words. Modest, that's chaste, be modest. Innocent, that's another way of putting it. Homemakers, good in attitude and conduct, the Greek talks about. Obedient to your husbands. Why, this is just archaic dinosaur garbage. That's how the world would teach you. That the word of God may not be blasphemed. How you learn that? Study the example of the older ladies who are successful with this. Okay. We have widows and widowers, but we have widows. I got to call Odessa my church of widows. Almost all of them are widows now. And the younger women in there can learn, if they're looking, how do I handle that part of my life? Now, again, if you're 20, it's kind of hard to grasp that. But there's so many different things. You find a humility. And you see so many of those
Mrs. Martin down in Odessa. Her husband passed away 40-something years ago. A lot of you know Mrs. Martin. Everybody knows Mrs. Martin. You can be in church anytime. Go to the feast. Where's Mrs. Martin? But she talks about her husband as if he died last week. He died 40 years ago. And she says, there's never another man for me. Martin was my man. And we had wonderful years together. And I always liked a big, chunky man. And that's what I got, you know. And she tells the same story over and over and over. And it's beautiful to hear. She loved that man. But what can I learn as a younger person? Learn that principle. Even though he's been dead a long time, boy, she loves him, honors him. She honors him. He's dead for years and years and years. But she honors him. What can you learn as a young woman? Honor them. Honor your husband. How? We went through that today. But an older woman who has a hard time walking, has a hard time hearing, she's 90 years old. She can preach a sermon if you're just listening. See? If you just stop and talk to her. Well, I admit it. I'm going to take a sermon at class and forget it. See? You don't have to have that. Look at the example. Okay. Likewise, exhort the younger men to be serious-minded. Because, you know, we young men, we tend to be kind of dumb. You know? Oh, you mean I shouldn't ride a skateboard down the handle rail of a staircase? Okay. We need to remove him from the gene pool because, boy, I'd hate to see what he's going to produce. But you know what? He thinks that's manly when he breaks his arm 3 different places in his spine, 4 different places, and he can just get up and go again. Come see me in 20 years. Oh, can't move. And he's going to be a lot wiser. What was he trying to prove in those dumb things? Well, young men do stupid things like that. How many of you did dumb things? Come on. We all did, didn't we? I truly believe this. God gave guardian angels to watch over stupid males when they're growing up. And then my sons tell me some of the dumb things they did, and we tried to watch them carefully. Yeah, Dad, we used to. You did that too, didn't you? Younger men, what can we learn from this? Okay. Yep. There you go. Bring a ladder. Get a younger man who's dumb, he'll do it too. It's okay. Well, you know, I think you see the principles. The principles are there. And so, just a little example here. I don't want to go on and on and on, but just the example of it when I was growing up. I came from a divorced household and so forth. And my mother remarried. And she married this old cowboy, kind of just carnal codger, you know. And nice. He still is. He's almost 90 now. And he had seen some rough times in his life. And he really didn't talk much about it. But when he started talking to me, because he knew I wanted to quit high school, I had on a 4-point scale, I was tipping the scale at 1.60. And I was going to go be a hippie in California, so it kind of dates me. My mother married this cowboy, you know, and I come from a hippie family. So there you go. And, of course, my brothers are just mortified. And I'm 16, 17, whatever it was. And so anyway. And we went for a walk one day. And I'm just telling you this to show you the older man can teach younger, if you're listening, to not make mistakes. And he told me, he said, he knew what I wanted to do. I was going to quit school, go be a hippie, and do that same. I know I look like a hippie, I know. And I had my reasons, you know, divorced family, blah, 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 blah. So we walked out to the barn. That's a real good place to get education. We were going to work on this thing. It kind of sunk into the ground. We were going to jack the thing up, literally jack it up with a hydraulic jack, get it straightened out, blah, blah, blah. And he started with this. He says, you know, Tom, he says, when I was when I was a young man, I had a full scholarship to UCLA to be a doctor during the Depression. He was no dummy. He says, I turned that down to fly those airplanes in the Air Force. And of course, World War II started, and he flew. So during that time, and again, trying to do not give you every detail, but he says, and he was a colonel, worked his way up to colonel in the Air Force, I believe it was. And here I am, I'm like 16 years old, I know everything, you just ask me. And he says, and I worked my way up to colonel one day, and I killed a man. And I'm thinking, what? I mean, you're the murderer. Well, long story short, they didn't put him in jail, but they threw him out of the service. And it took me years to figure out what that was about. I don't need to get into it here. And he says, and then I decided to reenlist as a buck private. And he worked his way back up to sergeant, and then he got an honorable discharge. And he says, what I learned from that is I can't blame anybody else for my mistakes. Boom! Did he reach me? Yeah. If he'd have said, are you young people today? You don't know. I'm not going to hear that. Oh, I heard what he said. Boy. Got right. And he says, you can't blame anybody else for your mistakes. He says, I made mine. I paid the price. And I made the corrections. So I'm just trying to show you that's an example. So years later, I told him, I had my wife and kids. And he says, well, I think I told you this. I said, well, God brought you into my life just at the right time because I was headed in the wrong direction. Well, he about choked on his tobacco that he was chewing. And, you know, so he appreciated it, but he'll never admit it. He just can't. That generation cannot express feelings, and the men are just not very good at it. So anyway, likewise, let's talk about the men here. So he's always was very much a father figure to me, and I appreciate it. Likewise, exhort the younger men to be sober-minded. So again, that's use some self-constraint. So that's what he was doing. He was doing that. He doesn't know the Bible. He doesn't know that stuff. But he used the principle. In all things, show yourself to be a pattern of good works. In doctrine, again, the elder here, showing integrity, reverence, and incorruptibility. You're not easily swayed. You're not certainly not perfect. But you try to do these things in a godly way. Sound speech that cannot be condemned, that no one is that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say about you. Again, we can all find things we fall short in, but not these huge, glaring things. Exhort servants to be obedient to their masters. He didn't say in slavery. Well, Paul was a racist, blah, 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 blah. Oh, be quiet. Paul couldn't change the world. But he knew the small church just getting started out. What he could do is teach these principles. If you're a slave, be the best one you can and be an example. If you're a wife, not that that's equal to a slave, but anyway, be the best one you can. If you're a husband, be the best one you can. Be a good example. If you're an older woman, be a good example. If you're a younger woman, be a good example by learning, studying the older women. By look at their example. So exhort the servants to be obedient to their masters, to be well-pleasing in all things, not answering back. Not pilfering or... where we go here? Not pilfering, but showing all good fidelity or faithfulness, that they may be adorn the doctrine of God, our Savior, in all things. In other words, within the church, learn to do these things too. You can't go out and change the world. You can't change slavery. To this day, it's still going on. But if you're in that predicament, remember, everything you say and do is going to reflect on the church. Philemon talks a lot about that, with slavery within the church. This is foreign to us. Slavery in the church? Yes. At one point, we had slaves in the church. How do you handle that? Well, the book of Philemon, which is the next one, talks a lot about that, some of these principles. You don't go out and become revolutionary because the Roman Empire will crush it. But you do on a one-on-one basis change the way you live. Be honorable in whatever you do. Try to be obedient in everything you do. Do it with a conscience towards God. And that is an example to everyone around you, whether they're in the church or not in the church. That's sort of the whole principle that he's talking about here. Let me just quickly, we're going to finish this chapter and then we'll finish up, come back later. Verse 11. For the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men. It's a way of saying Christ has come. The Messiah has come. Teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly, righteously, godly in the present age. In whatever condition you find yourself. And if you're a slave and you get free, do that. He would say that later on. But don't go out and cut the throat of your master and then go to church on Saturday afternoon. You know, can't do that. I think we all know that. Looking for the Blessed One, referring to Christ, the glorious appearing of our great God and Savior Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us, that he might redeem us from every lawless deed and purify for himself his own special people, zealous for good works. And it starts here with these the healthy teachings and so forth. Speak these things, exhort and rebuke with all authority. Let no one despise you. And Timothy was that because he was a young man. But here, don't let anybody despise you. When you give sound doctrine, if they don't like it, too bad. You have to preach it. If they don't like it, too bad. You've got to speak it so that people will hear it, and then you're, at least you've done your part. And don't worry about that. Okay, I'll stop there. It seems to be a long day. Trey's got his gun out and loading it. So I tell you, I'm not going to push that boy. Any questions or anything? You're the crazy man and the old man in the tree? When somebody's an adult, they're responsible for those decisions, and the stories can be so complicated and convoluted. But you still, and believe me, you, if the, and I know pastors who've sacrificed their families for the church, and they feel a guilt for that. Not that they didn't love the church, but they neglected their children. And there's a lot of pain in that. And what about how do you reach them? How do you talk to them? Example. Example. Not by words, but by deeds. They will watch how you treat her, how she treats you, how you talk to them. It would be different than what was before conversion. Example. That's the key thing that will be for you. For example, they'll study you. I've had one family member. Again, not that I make my mistakes, believe me. Sometimes they'll say, I watched you before I decided to come in. I watched what you were doing. So have anybody you ever ran into that where a family member, I watched you. Because everybody gets Jesus, right? And then 6 months later, they're out back to where they were at. So people watch you. So the way you reach your children or whoever you're talking about is by example. You're not the same person you were before. How you treat her, how you talk to her, how she talks to you. If you make a mistake, you say, hey, I was wrong. You know, all these things we talked about today. That's how you reach them. They see a different you. That's the light, not a preaching. And if they ask you, then you say, boy, you want to see how I've done wrong? You've seen that. Whatever. But I'm learning. I'm certainly not perfect, but I'm learning. And what you're seeing is that reflection of the learning. But beyond that, I don't really want to say too much because I'll get in the way. Let your example be there. I hope that helps. Yes. But you do that in love. And you say, you know, I cannot agree with that. You know, I love you. The whole principle is you still love them, but you don't compromise with what you know to be. A pastor has to do that. And it can be really painful at times where you don't, you know, you have to say, you know, you're wrong in this area. It has to change. It's not that I don't dislike you, it's because I do. But there's times for that. But you're just saying I have to make a choice. And my choice is to do what I know to be right.
And that also the principle and the attitude that has to enter through according to their fault and then don't enter through according to their fault.
Lest he be wise in his own eyes, yeah, the same principle. You see, it takes time to learn those things, and you get your fingers burned and your toes blown off. You learn. You learn. Okay. Well, we'll try to finish Titus next time. So let's just hope we get to that length. All right. Thanks for coming.